Welcome back to Downtown. And veteran listeners know by the sound of that music, we're about to get happy here. As Eric Meehan is here from the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company with this week's Message in a Bottle. And welcome, Eric.
Hello. Bruce, thank you for filling in. Rich, what a slacker.
Oh, well.
My dog's sick.
Hey, the thing is, when you promised me desserts and wine, I'm showing up, right?
Of all the days you're gonna take off? Oh, man, for a sick dog?
Yeah, I'm never going to say no on Tuesday.
Call Abby. Have her do it. Stick around. No. Hi, everybody. So there's a tremendous amount to talk about today. Sadly, more than I was prepared for, but we do want to touch on the big fires out in California. The first thing I need to start on, though, is just something that I came across right before this. So I was trying this, you know, touching on the sports element of this. I always feel the need to interject. So I was trying to explain to my wife why Mitch Trubisky starting the other day was such a big deal for the Bears, and how the first real franchise I remember growing up with and you know, was the 1985 Bears. Oh, goodness gracious.
The 1985 Bears.
And then the SNL spinoffs and the Bears stuff, and all these things, and how important Ditka was and all this. So I'm glad to know that apparently Mike Ditka is unaware of any oppression happening in this country for the past 100 years. And I just want to tell everybody out there that's been feeling oppressed, you're wrong. Because Ditka says so.
Yeah, I mean, I said earlier that he went from Iron Mike to Iron Head.
Right? I don't mean
Iron Head Hayward. That was
no,
just,
he was the greatest.
There's been no oppression.
It was one of the most horrible things I've ever heard from one of the true, you know, again, not mixing politics and sports and stuff like that. Like, he was one guy I really was hoping would remain pure, and we just lost it. Sad. So I just had to get that out, because Mikey. All right, listen. So what's going on right now? Today we're going to talk about the Pacific Northwest, but before we talk about the Pacific Northwest, I'm sure you're all aware of the very, very sad events that are going out in California right now, and I kind of wanted to touch on it. If you haven't heard the news, Sunday, a couple wildfires started, aided and abetted by massive winds and essentially what California is like right now at this time of year. And these fires spread fast, and they spread hard, and they spread over a considerable amount of the vineyard land in California that we all like a lot. I have several friends out there right now, all of whom, as far as I'm aware, are safe. Not all have checked in, but most have. So just, you know, people are asking, you know, what's going on. So I just kind of want to touch on this, because we were talking about California last month. They're happening primarily in Napa and Sonoma. So two names you know very well. Napa and Sonoma are essentially connected at the bottom. So that's kind of where the root of all these fires is happening, around the city of Santa Rosa. And then also heavily in the American viticultural area known as Atlas Peak. It's already consumed over, I think, 100,000 acres. A lot of that vineyard land and wineries, a number of wineries that you may know and love aren't there anymore. Signorello Estate gone, Paradise Ridge Winery gone. My friend who works for Behringer as the hospitality director tells us that Chateau Saint-Jean, which many of you may well know, likely gone. Of course, massive amounts of vineyard lands are gone. Fortunately, there have not been that many fatalities, thank goodness. But we are going to be seeing the effects of these fires in the bottles themselves. I mean, this is one of the more tragic ways of realizing that the terroir is a real thing. But a friend of mine and I were reminiscing about the 08 vintage from this area that was famously smoky because of wildfires. And I think it's no doubt that if indeed there is a vintage from this area, it will be rife with smoke, and that will be good in some wines and bad in some wines. But hopefully, regardless of how the wines are, we can all support this area with our money. Sadly, it's the area that charges the most money, so we'll have to do it bottle by bottle instead of case by case. Of course, prayers for everybody who's lost homes, property, lives, hopefully, I'm sure they will rebuild. It's been a pretty devastating time for our friends out in the California wine country.
You know, you bring up the economics of it. It's been a glut in Europe in the last several years in various countries of wine. Do we expect to see a big flood of French and Italian and Spanish and Portuguese wines. I mean, I realize we're not talking about the same price points where the glut is and where and what's lost, but do you expect that to be something that they'll be knocking at your door as a retailer?
No. In a word, no. Although I'd love to, right? It's funny, actually, you mentioned that because for a while, back in the day when it was politically incorrect to want to buy French things and such like that, and this was when I started in the, well, probably 10, 15 years ago, and people came in and they said they don't want to support French things and the full French fry and freedom fry thing, and that was a real thing. So people didn't want to buy European wines, and the California wines didn't take advantage of that properly, and I don't know that Americans are ready for our hearts to be open to wines from regions that we don't know just because we can't have our Napa cab. I will certainly, you know, try to suggest to people who, you know, are looking for X, Y, or Z that maybe that, but it's always, you know, I think unfortunately the wineries that are being most affected right now are wines that really can't be replicated.
Right.
In Europe. And that's, again, the beauty of terroir. I mean, these are some of the greatest vineyard lands in America. So we'll see how they recover. But fortunately, I mean, this is nature, and nature has a way of recuperating a lot faster than perhaps humanity does. And so I would expect that the lands themselves can come about fairly quickly and be producing good quality fruit in a matter of years. The question is the financial fallout of this. Right. I mean, the entire region's decimated. If you look at pictures of Santa Rosa, it ain't there anymore. It's dramatic in its similarities to the pictures of hurricane aftermath that we've seen so recently, or tornado aftermaths in the Midwest. I mean, when a town gets leveled, man, it gets leveled. And these fires were so hot that it incinerated. I mean, it wasn't even a slow burn. I mean, you hear these tales of the survivors, one couple that had to crawl their way and jump into their swimming pool and just breathe while the fire burned around their house. I mean, it's just, they had no time. Yeah, it's going to be dramatic. No good segue from that, but again, thoughts, prayers, which are both meaningful and meaningless, going out to our friends. And to Leanne and everybody else out there who's still in harm's way, stay safe. Now, Oregon. We have a couple minutes left to touch on what is a fantastically huge segment of American wine that currently, as far as I'm aware, is not under the threat of any major natural disaster. Let's keep our fingers crossed there. Willamette Valley, what I'm calling America's Burgundy brother from another mother. So... what makes the Willamette Valley similar to Burgundy, and why do we care? Well, of course, Burgundy is, again, one of the best by, you know, the structure of the earth and various happenings from the time of Pangaea to now, to turn this little plot of earth up and down the Saone River into a wonderful vineyard land. It's ancient seabed. That's a very, very important thing to keep in mind there in Burgundy, especially up in the region of Chablis or Chablis for you snobs. So that is also what happened in Oregon. Oregon, the valleys of Oregon, which are very, very similar to these valleys, these sort of rippling valleys, each with a nice hillside slope up in Burgundy. What happened was Lake Missoula was this gigantic prehistoric lake. And when I say gigantic, I mean we're talking a huge, huge inland sea. And it was dammed up by huge rocks. And then during some form of plate tectonics, the dam burst and floods, and we're talking floods that reshaped the earth, came pouring into where the Willamette Valley is now. And guess what it made? The Willamette Valley. It made that. It wasn't there, then it was. And at the top end of the lake, or top end of the valley, rather, you find what are called erratics. And these erratics are these huge boulders that don't really belong there geologically, because they don't really belong there geologically. They were carried. These were the sort of the base boulders of this dam of Lake Missoula. And if anybody knows where Missoula is, it ain't anywhere near the Willamette Valley. It's in Montana. So, needless to say, the lake was bigger than the town itself. So we have this gigantic force of all this rushing water taking these gigantic boulders and carrying them just miles and miles and miles and miles and miles, and depositing them with a bunch of this really pristine seabed and all this gorgeous soil into the top end of the Willamette Valley, which I believe it was 5 years ago or so, was designated its own special AVA or American Viticultural Area called Yamhill Carlton. And this they claim the oldest soil in the Willamette Valley itself. And it really, I mean, it turns out some absolutely pristine wines. Let's talk a little bit more about it. So also in Oregon, not only is it like Burgundy, but they've really taken that to heart and are planting Burgundian varietals, right? And going and finding these clones of these Burgundy varietals. So this particular clone that was brought over from Dijon, you know, the Dijon clone number this, whatever, and this clone, and they're grafting it onto this rootstock, which reduces yield and creates a lot of strain and stress, which the roots like. And they've put a lot of thought into how to turn this section of America into Burgundy, but better even, because there's frankly fewer rules necessarily, just boundaries essentially. And if you're in the boundary, yay. And if you're not in the boundary, yeah. But you have a lot of fantastic ideas and money, frankly, supporting those ideas. And so you're getting a lot of really fabulous wine. The winery we're working with today and tasting, this is a Pinot Noir from Grand Morain. Grand Morain is a winery named after these gigantic rocks that were the dam that burst eventually and are deposited all over. So this is their 2013 Pinot Noir. This is totally made like a good Burgundy in every way, from the early morning picking, the 100% French barrels that it's aged in, long maceration, long skin contact. So absolutely a beautiful deep wine that is totally made for aging, and fairly affordable. So again, great Pinot Noirs, from all over the Willamette, as well as great Chardonnays, Pinot Gris, and other things like that. And so I highly recommend, if you're a fan of the wines of Burgundy, but not the prices of Burgundy necessarily, or the sporadic nature of some Burgundy, do check out wines from the Willamette Valley. Of course, not only Grand Morain, but the wines from David Adelsheim. Ponzi is another great one. And on and on and on. Fantastic wines coming out of there, so check them out. I did want to mention before we run out of time, we have a couple things coming up. On the 17th at Gagan's Tasting Room over in Brewer, my lovely wife will be doing beer can yoga from 6 to 8 p.m. She has designed a hour of yoga around drinking out of a beer can to celebrate their new beer can. So you will be consuming one beer can during the yoga and one beer after.
Can I live at your house?
I don't know where they came up with this idea. I was totally like, oh, it's the beers afterward. No, it's during. Oh, go do it. Have fun with that. And so $20, tickets available at the Gagan's Tasting Room, which is where the event will be, again, the 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. And then next Thursday, the 19th, we will be having Cheers, a fantastic fundraiser for the Bangor Symphony Orchestra from 5 to 7 p.m. So come in, drink some beers, some wines, and we'll raise a little money for my favorite local orchestra. And cool. And we'll see you here. We'll hear you here. Talk to you here next Tuesday.
That's right. That's Eric Meehan from Bangor Wine and Cheese.